Whoa, hey, we got some action going on here today on the Project 223 podcast. Part two of our special interview with author and speaker Joe Dolio from Tactical Wisdom. Joe is a former Marine, and he currently is writing some great books on how you, the average citizen, can be better prepared for the trouble that's coming ahead. These are books that'll get you ready for a situation where the rule of law has been cast aside and you may be on your own. So without further ado, we're going to get into part two of our interview. We're talking about Joe's book series, the Tactical Wisdom series. We're going into book three, so I'm glad you're with us. Hang on, buckle your seatbelts. It's going to be a wild ride. Great. So now we're moving on to book three, is defensive operations. I love the quote in there. You said you were talking to somebody and he said, "I don't want to play soldier boy." And so why would I want to, act like this? What was your response to that?
So my response to this is that, you might not want to play soldier boy, but if that's the game everyone else is playing and you're not ready to play it, you're going to lose. And losing at playing soldier means you die.
Yep.
I have another great quote that I use for this, is that everyone into preparedness believes they're going to live out some sort of Little House on the Prairie cosplay, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to go back to the old ways. We're going to grow our own food. We're going to cook our own food. We're going to hunt. It's all going to be so peaceful. But listen, bad guys won't go away. There are still going to be lazy people in the world who would rather take things from people than not. And right now, the only thing that protects you from crime is the fear of detection and fear of apprehension.
Exactly.
Once that's gone,
the thin blue line, is that what they call it?
Yeah, the thin blue line. Once that's gone, man, it's going to be in bad shape. And I know a lot of guys say, listen, my house is so rural that no one's going to find me. Well, guess what? You bought that house there, genius. You found it. So guess what? Somebody else can find it too. So you need to have the defensive skills to defend your property, no matter how peaceful you want to be. You can be really peaceful until others decide you can't be.
Well, exactly. And then I can tell you exactly who in my local neighborhood, and I live out of ways. We moved out of the city, one of the best things we've done. And we're not too far from urban areas, but I know exactly who in my area has chickens because I can hear them crowing and the roosters. I know who's got cattle. I know who's got gardens. So if I know it, other people know it as well, right? And just the other day, I was sitting there in my driveway back by my shop, and this red truck just pulls up. It's a private drive, but we don't have a gate or anything. Red truck pulled right in front of my thing, and a guy got out, and I was like, "Well, who are these guys?" And I didn't know who they were. And "Oh yeah, we're selling steaks." They had like an old chest freezer in the back of their beat up pickup. "We're going through the neighborhood selling steaks. You know, have you heard of us?" And he didn't even say who they were. And you know, the red flags are going off. But that's even today, right? It won't take much in a without rule of law situation for.
And that's a great scouting program, right?
To find out
where other people are. I can pretend to be selling steaks.
Looking for my lost dog, or yeah.
And these people say, "Well, you know, all that trouble's going to be in the cities." Well, once the cities have been picked clean, the people aren't just going to be like, "Oh, well, I guess we ate it all. We'll just lay here and die then."
Yeah.
They're going to start moving outward and outward and outward, and they're eventually going to find you. So, you know, you have to be ready no matter what. It's better to prepare and not need it than to not prepare at all and have somebody come and take your stuff from you.
Exactly. And then, you know, we talked about the cities in your defensive operations book. You talk about fortifying and putting up defenses in your home. Some people, it seems like, are they even in a location where that would do any good if they're in a suburban neighborhood or they're living in an apartment in a city?
Oh yeah, in an apartment, you need to move. You're never going to get everyone in an apartment building to sign on to whatever your plan is. So the best thing you can do is leave, right?
Exactly.
And
I agree.
In your cul-de-sac type neighborhood, if you don't have everyone on board, someone's going to be working against you the whole time. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. I really can't imagine trying to stick it out in a city in an apartment or in a suburban neighborhood.
Sure. So do you think that people should go so far as to leave blue states for red states? I know a lot of people really push that concept of just getting out of the state altogether.
Well, yes and no. So yeah, absolutely. There's a thing that we joke about on our channel, but we call it the Duchy of Montana, that we're all going to move out there and do this. But it's actually sort of a real thing. We're sort of doing that, right? Getting into a more rural area where it's surrounded by state land and federal land, and we're able to push out our perimeter a little bit further, right? But it's not necessarily so much as leaving blue states. It's leaving blue counties. So I live in Michigan. And once you get out of Detroit, Grand Rapids, Lansing, and Flint, the rest of the state is literally red, and deep red, not just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So leave blue enclaves and get to red enclaves, not necessarily states.
Sure. No, I like that. I agree 100%. And that's what I was, moving on is like, I was going to ask, does having a nice piece of property and a good mutual assistance group, if you're in an area it's a liberal leftist area, but yet you have that group, or maybe you are out enough far away to where you're not right in the middle of things, is that going to be good enough, you think? And you kind of answered that question a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly think that it is. So, like, for example, up north where we have our cabin, everyone around there leans the same way, except maybe one or two. That becomes like a little fortified area if
sure.
things go bad. And that's kind of where you need to be. And I've talked to some guys in Kentucky, and they're just buying a piece of undeveloped property because their point is this: if it happens this year, we can go out and buy us a big GP medium tent and take it over there, and we can start with that and then build later. But if things stay up and running for the next year or two, they're going to build some structures on there and have it. Just having anything where you can get away from where most people are is a plus. But whatever it is and wherever it is, you need to have a solid, in-depth defensive plan, and that book will help you build it.
I agree. Okay, and that's nice. I'm taking notes here. It's good stuff. I have a good friend that's in my personal group, and his we'll call him Tango Hotel. And he wanted me to ask you this question. He said, "What are some of your basic thoughts when talking to someone who is looking to relocate? Home features, property requirements, etc." And you hit a little bit on that, but do you have any other things to add?
Yeah, number one is access to water. Everyone talks about all the water stores you're going to have. You can literally not store enough water. More importantly, even if you did store enough water, you can't carry it. Hmm. So you need whatever place you get properties to have water under it or nearby that you can get to, and not just like, not the community water well, but something that's safe and secure, a creek, something that you can get to without walking down a main road.
Sure.
So access to water. Two, it'd be great if it was arable land that you can actually grow something on, because you're going to have to produce for yourself. Now, I'm not saying get complete open fields. You can still grow under tree cover,
sure,
but you need somewhere where you can grow things. So it needs to have good soil. And I would prefer something, you've heard of the military acronym, obviously you have my book, COCO.
Yep.
Key terrain, observations in field of fire, cover and concealment, obstacles, avenues of approach. Look at any piece of property from that. Something you can limit people's access to and protect, and it has to have a defensible perimeter. You have to be able to put up wire or fencing or something that covers the whole thing so folks know, don't cross this line.
Sure. I guess a tough thing for me is that we have this nice piece of property, and it's got this beautiful, yard in front and nice trees. And I'm thinking, at what point do I put up the razor wire? Is my wife going to say, sorry, that's not going up there?
Well, you hold on to it till you need it.
Exactly, right?
But you can literally buy coils and coils and coils of razor wire that you can just store and put up when you need them.
Sure. Are you familiar with the company Strategic Landscape Design? And would you recommend that people, if they have the resources, that they hire a consultant to come in? Or do you think that the average person can get a book like yours and do a little research on their own?
Well, I recommend both. I think that if you have some skill and you spend some time learning it, you could do it on your own because it's mostly common sense. But strategic landscape design is a real thing. And if you have a large property, you need someone to do that.
Sure.
For the record, I do this regularly for people. People pay me to come out and walk their property with them and give them advice and ideas.
Oh, really?
On how to better secure their property. And I look at more than just the property. I also come into your house and say, okay, well, show me your food storage. Hey, do me a favor. Why don't you show me all of your fire extinguishers? And guess what I find? Over half the fire extinguishers in these houses are either out of date or are out of the green on it. So
sure.
Kind of a whole thing, right? I wouldn't necessarily worry about getting a property with power generation capabilities because that's just not going to be a thing either way. But you need to think about how you can better defend it and how you can better protect it. And the even better thing is how you can hide access to it. It's better it look abandoned and like there's no one living on this piece of property. Like the house is off the road. They can't see it. Don't give them a reason to come down that little driveway to see what's there.
Sure. So if you have a bunch of lights on burning from your battery banks that you have in the middle of the night and everybody else is in the black, that might not be a smart way to go about it.
Right. And you know what I tell people to do, and this is a great tip from that book, and I mention this all the time, people don't do it, is you can go to, like, I don't know, Home Depot, literally anywhere, and buy a little solar-powered yard light that's like a spotlight. Well, what most people do is they put them up against their house so that when somebody moves between the house, that it shines in the house. I say, no, take those and put them out by your road angle them across the front of your property so that when somebody crosses that property line, a light suddenly comes on shining on them. It makes them feel like someone literally just saw them. And these are a great idea, especially for like backwoods. If you have woods behind your house, stick one or two of these in the woods along a regular path that somebody might be using or the best avenue of approach. Let someone sneak up on your house and a light suddenly turn on. You're going to change their thinking pretty quick.
Well, yeah, and I know I try not to buy a lot of the main China stuff, but you can go to Harbor Freight if you're on a limited budget, and they have perimeter alarms, window alarms, all kinds of stuff like that you can use to get started. I think it's like you said earlier, start doing something today. Do one thing today. You don't have to have a complete defensive perimeter, but if you can do one thing, like you said, putting some solar-powered lights down at the entrance to your driveway, you're going to be better off than you were today.
Yeah, and you'll see it too. So you're at night, you're doing your guard duty, you're looking in one direction. All of a sudden, you see lights in the woods behind you. You know something's about to happen. And those cheap perimeter alarms, I'll tell you what, I tell people to carry those when you're traveling. I get in a hotel room, I'm going to throw one of those little stick-up perimeter alarms on the hotel room door.
Uh-huh.
Right? I'll know when it opens.
Exactly.
Or if I'm leaving the room and somebody opens it, they're going to get a surprise. So.
Exactly. No, I like that. Any advantage you can get, right? Always be improving your position. Yep. Great. Anything else from book three, Joe, that you want to share?
Take a serious, I think that the best thing is to recap the whole book. Take a serious, serious look at your property or your home from the attacker's perspective, not from yours. And then address the concerns you find. And while you can hire someone to come out and do it, and I'm more than happy to take your money, the vast majority of it is just common sense. Hey, I've got an opening here. I should put a gate on it or something like that.
Sure. And I bet if somebody that's listening does have it, and hopefully they do have a mutual assistance group or community group or friends that try to help each other, even just grabbing three or four of your buddies and say, hey, will you do this for me? It takes them out of, you know, it puts it into a different perspective, and they can come in from the attacker's position and maybe point out things that you just overlook from familiarity every day.
Absolutely. So two things on that. One is, yes, get three or four different people to give you their ideas. And number one, you might find out some members of your group might not be very good. No, I'm just kidding. but also you should do walkthroughs of each other's houses and properties so that if the call comes out in the middle of the night that, you know, you're having a problem and there's people between them and the street, they've got an idea of how to get on your property quietly or get to where you are quickly. And it's not the first time they're seeing the inside of your house.
Got it. And that reminds me, I'm going to hit on that a little bit more when we talk about book 3A, contacts and notes. So I'm making a note here to talk about that. All right. So serious look from the attacker's position. I like that. Okay. So in book 4, we go to scouting and patrolling. This one, we start going on the offensive. Is that right?
This one's a little bit spicier. So when we know that bad folks are going to be about in a without rule of law situation, and we know that there's no law enforcement coming to help you, let's even be honest. Everyone says, well, the constitutional sheriff will still be there. Yeah, but he's going to be protecting the county office building, and he's going to be protecting the sheriff's station. He's not coming out to respond to you in the middle of the night. But if I learn that there's a group of people traveling around our area raiding others, isn't it better to go find them and hit them where they are or ambush them along the road than it is to let them come to your front door?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the entire point of the book.
Sure. One of the things I like to tell people is that you will get what you allow in your life. Whatever you allow people to do to you, whatever you allow your government to do, the people in your neighborhood, criminals, you'll get what you allow them to do. If you need to draw that line somewhere.
Absolutely. And so when I went to write this, I took a classic written during World War II by Colonel Rex Applegate. When World War II happened, we didn't have a lot of Americans who had outdoor skills. So he wrote a book about it on how to move around and how the Japanese operated and how the Germans operated and how to maybe take that fight to them. And so when I was in the Marines, the scouting and patrolling manual was one of the favorites. I always liked going out training on that one. And so I thought, you know what, this might be a good thing for us. So I took the U.S. manual, the original 1943 one. I went all the way back to to where the U.S. Rangers got founded, right?
Sure.
During the French and Indian War. And I took all of those skills and put them into one book. And it's just a great tool to learn how to do those things that maybe people hadn't considered. And there's reasons for that, which we're going to get to in a minute. I see the things on the list here. But I even point out in here that the Ukraine war has taught us that, hey, man, things like this could happen, and you need to be able to protect your people. And there are some skills you can do that will help you do that. It's better to detect a threat farther away from your property and to deal with it as far away from your property as possible. This book gives you those skills.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's controversial for a lot of people, depending on the political leanings of your neighborhoods. I lived in the city I was in before. It was mostly left-leaning, Democrat, neighborhood. And, I'd report on the local Nextdoor app or whatever that, hey, you know, saw this suspicious character walking through the alley looking in people's yards, and I ran him off. And you'd get the quotes would be, well, did you know he was a criminal? Did you see him take something? And I couldn't believe that people were wanting to defend,
right,
defend this guy. I'd see the down the road was the main drag where there was the, you know, people living in their cars, and that was just an accepted thing. But I saw one on the street next to my house, and I went out and I just knocked on the thing and said, hey, you know, this is not a campground. You can't stay here. And, well, what do you mean? Nope, sorry, you got to go. And the guy drove off, you know? So it was, like you said, going out and heading off before that person broke into my car that night or came and stole something out of my backyard. I went out and stopped that and made that.
Well, see, it's interesting that you point that out, because all these neighborhoods, these liberal progressive neighborhoods who have allowed that to happen, or they built these little mini houses in their backyards for the homeless people. Guess what? Every single one of them has reported an increase in property crimes in their neighborhoods after they allowed that. It's just common sense, right?
Exactly. Well, and not to be callous, and we have the love of God in us for these people, but I've seen it over and over and over, and it's the drugs and it's the alcohol that destroy these people's lives. And once somebody's addicted to drugs, once they've let alcohol come in, and they no longer have that power. I mean, they have the power to make a decision to stop if they get help, but a lot of those people, they're not making those decisions out of, well, I just want to do this, because they're not even thinking about that. They're just thinking about their next high or getting what they want at that moment. And it's really sad to see.
Well, and that goes back to your thing about those the nice sleeping bags and blankets that the soccer mom and her kids handed out, made them feel good. But that person was like, this isn't going to help me get my next hit. And they toss it aside. And you just wasted all that money that could have been better spent going to a food bank.
Oh, exactly. And you see the soccer mom pull up at the intersection and hand the dollar to the guy, and it may assuage her conscience that she did that good deed for the day. But then that guy goes out and buys his next thing of heroin.
Well, listen, let me say this: as a guy who does surveillance for a living, I spend a lot of time just sitting in my car looking at street corners, and so I want people to do this example: find the street corner where the beggars hang out. And I want you to find a parking lot where you can see it. And I want you to watch it for a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. And when you see that, sit down and pull out a stack of 20s and start counting it, you're going to really have your eyes opened about most of these people at these street corners.
Uh-huh. So. And funny story is, though, you know, I'm sitting on one and I see the guy ride up in his bike and kind of throw it off in the bushes. And then he grabs a stack of cardboard signs and he shuffles through them, finds the one he wants and pulls it out. And it says, you know, homeless vet, down on my luck, God bless with the little fish. And, you know, he picked the sign that he wanted that day. And then a little while later in the afternoon, I saw him sitting at Starbucks with a 32-ounce double, triple mocha latte, whatever it was, enjoying the newspaper. And
or they're sitting here on the corner, scrolling through their smartphone, drinking a Monster.
Yeah.
You're not in such bad shape if you've got a Monster and a cell phone.
No, the stories could go on.
Yeah, you don't want to think that way, but it's just true. So you just asked that question. You said it could be controversial for a lot of people. Yeah, it could. It could. But here's the thing, and it's the same thing we tell people about defending your home. You're not the one making the decision to go out and attack others. And I'm not saying you just go out and attack any large group that's out there. I'm saying, listen, we've gathered the info, and in both book 3 and 4, there's a lot of talk about how you gather this info, right? So we've been gathering info, and we find out that there is this particular group. They dress a particular way, or they're at a particular campsite, but they're moving around, and we know where they're going to be tomorrow. Well, if I've got all that info, and I know it's them, and I know where they're going to be tomorrow, yep, I'm going to set up an ambush, and I'm going to get them there. And one of the questions here you have, is there any hope for the Christian who wants to stay law-abiding? Self-defense is law-abiding.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the Bible, God arranged and directed ambushes be used dozens and dozens and dozens of times. The battle of Ai, it's in Joshua.
Yep.
Joshua could not beat this town, and God said, listen, this is what I want you to do. He goes, I want you to set up a bunch of guys behind the town in an ambush, then I want you to go and be seen at the gate, then I want you to run past your ambush. Well, we call that cleaning the tail. That's a military tactic, right? Let them come running right through your ambush, and then you smoke the people who are following you. That's not that. If God told them to do it, it's okay, as long as you know who the bad guys are.
Yeah.
It's just like getting involved in a self-defense situation. I tell a story of a couple of San Francisco officers a couple of years ago. They roll up on a street corner, and there's a man and a woman in the middle of the street, and they're both pulling on a purse. So, conventional wisdom, here's a man yanking on a purse. Here's a woman yanking on a purse. The man's obviously trying to steal her purse. So they run up, tackle that guy, put a beating on him. And then a wife comes running up and goes, that's my husband. That woman just stole my purse, and you helped her get away. So this is the point that I make. While I'm going to teach you those skills in this book, know exactly who it is you're dealing with. You're not just setting up ambushes and shooting everyone who comes along. You're setting up an ambush for known problem groups. Now, it becomes a lot easier when the Chinese invade. So we shoot the Chinese.
Exactly. Red Dawn.
And if you lived in any other part of the world, it could certainly never happen in America. But if you lived somewhere else in the world and it was an oppressive government, you might want to ambush the oppressive government forces. But that would never happen here.
Not even
in Minecraft.
No.
Not even if the president just made a speech about that.
No.
But anyway, know who it is you're dealing with. I have no problem ambushing a group that makes it that's going out killing and taking things from others. I guess a classic example of this is a place I talk about a lot, and it's South Africa. Mm-hmm. They have farm attacks that happen every single day. So if I was a farmer down there, and I know several people in the security industry there, and they do this in Africa, if they learn where a particular group is camped, a group of security contractors goes and hits that camp. Or they say, okay, well, they're camped here. Let's watch the camp and see where they're going tonight. And they say, all right, well, they're starting up the trail towards that guy's farm. They set up an ambush halfway to that guy's farm, and they take care of the problem.
Yes.
There's nothing immoral about that.
Yeah. You have some videos on your YouTube channel, I think, with some of those. analysis.
Yep, there's some great videos from South Africa on my YouTube channel.
Yeah. I think, you know, conservatives, people are at a disadvantage, the law-abiding citizen, because we don't want to be mean or aggressive or break the law, and we don't think about the fact that that person is, they themselves are a wicked, evil person that's trying to cause harm to others.
I mean, is it better to wait until he's raping your wife or daughter before you shoot him?
Nope. It's easy when it's not your wife or daughter. But as soon as it's your wife or daughter that they're coming at it, people's tune changes rather quickly, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the biggest things that I want to point out, this is somewhat controversial, and some people will say, oh, he's Fed posting. But over the last 2 years, beginning with the 2020 riots, they have proven to you that they're setting aside the law to come after you. They've arrested people for what is lawful self-defense. They're executing search warrants on very dubious legalities. They're coming after people who actually were just fulfilling their First Amendment rights and petitioning the government for the redress of grievances. Why are you so concerned with coloring within their lines when they're not coloring within the lines?
Yeah.
God's law takes a little more precedence than theirs.
Yep. And that's why we prepare. That's why we study. That's why we train, read books like yours, that we're prepared for whatever that trouble that comes is, so that we're not foolish and we don't suffer.
There's a saying in martial arts that applies here. First of all, I'm going to train to be the most hellish and worst warrior you'll ever face, but I don't want to ever face you. So there's that. And the saying in the martial arts is this. The guy goes to his teacher and he says, you know, you teach us about being a warrior, yet you're always out here gardening and doing this. And he says that it's far better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. Yep. Boy, is that ever true. I might learn the skills and then never use them. But if I've never learned the skills, I can't use them when I need to. And that goes back to that whole playing soldier thing we talked about.
I love that. That was my quote in one of my social media profiles for a few years. So I love that, that story. that's exactly right. And so the sad thing here is that, I don't know if you saw that article that came out from the Anti-Defamation League about the Oath Keepers. Did you see that, Joe?
So
they're trying to out people in government, people in official positions, because they joined the Oath Keepers group. Now, I'm not a defender of the Oath Keepers group in any way, shape, or form, and I think there may have been some fishy things that happened. But to besmirch somebody or say they're a terrible person because they are a, quote, Oath Keeper, they're literally saying that they want to withhold the oath that they took as a military. I took one and joined in the military. You did, to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, to defend this country. To say that those people are bad or evil, you could see how the tide can turn pretty quickly after that becomes a bad thing to do.
I've never seen what the evil is in wanting to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, which is the last best hope on earth for religious freedom and personal freedom anywhere.
Exactly. I don't know why all the broken and downtrodden from every country in the world would want to come to this country if it's such a terrible place.
Right?
Yep. And the reason why it was made such a great place is because of godly men and good people that wanted to ensure freedom and liberty, and they set up a system, and they set up a constitution, and so that's why I think it's important and worth defending. So yeah, well, great. So Scouting Patrolling, great book for, I like that one. And if you're worried about it, if people think about it, that's interesting to me, get the book and read it, and then make some judgments and see what you think. So anything else you want to share on book four?
No, not really. Just that, like I said, there's skills that we need to learn, even though we don't want to ever have to use them. But seriously, the observation post skills in there and things like that, those are things that will save your life. Even if you don't want to do any of the other stuff, learning how to build a subterranean site where you can get underground and cover yourself up and stay there, that can save your life, even if you don't use any of the other skills in the book.
That's right. And you may think that's crazy now, but when you're trying to do it, when you don't know how to do it because you're scared that you're going to be killed, you're going to be wishing you had those skills. So,
yep, absolutely.
So great. And then book 3A, going back to that one, is kind of a bonus, is Contact and Notes. And now this book was a little controversial for me. You know, here a few years back, I started joining up with some like-minded men, some great men. And I really feel like it was, you know, God that brought us together. But some of the guys were worried about having their names and details written down. And even just with guys that who were supposedly like-minded. What's your thoughts on that as far as OPSEC, the meaning of OPSEC and having that in these times?
Well, everyone in my group has a name they go by. I'm Bayonet Actual, right? And then there's NC Scout, and everyone has
Nom de Guerre.
Yeah, Nom de Guerre, right? So that's kind of what I would go with. And there are things you can do numerically to encode phone numbers. There are things you can do to alter what a frequency looks like. As long as everyone knows what the offsets are for anything you do, but doesn't write that part down, you can document this stuff and not compromise anyone.
Sure.
Now, if you look in the introduction to that book, or the preface to that book, it says quite clearly that this book, once filled out, is one of your most secure documents, and either prevent it from being taken or destroy it if it comes to that. We've got to organize. That's the thing.
Exactly.
And your options are to write it down in a notebook like this with some fake names and some altered phone numbers and altered contact details.
Sure.
Or put it in a computer. And
I was going to say, this is a lot better than putting it on any kind of electronic document, right?
No matter how air-gapped you think your computer is, if I get near it with a Wi-Fi sniffer or a Bluetooth sniffer, I can get everything out of it without too much trouble. So I would certainly use a written notebook way faster than I would use a computer. Now, when you fill this book out, it's not necessarily something that you should just leave out, right? It's something that should go somewhere even more secure than you normally do.
Exactly.
There are all kinds of hiding places you could keep this book for that rainy day. But I think it's a pretty good book to really organize things and get your group fleshed out on paper, right?
Sure. Well, and there, to me, there's different types of groups, right? You know, there's the, you know, and you know, there's the, and I'm not talking about the parody or the bad case of a militia that's being, you know, mocked.
Well, we don't say the M word.
Mocked by, but there is place for militia in the, you know, in the legal militias. But to have a group that's going to be a combat ready group, or it's going to be a raiding group, versus just having your community group, your neighborhood, a neighborhood watch. I mean, that's something everybody accepts.
Yep.
Block watch program. I'm sure you're familiar with the CERT team, the Community Emergency Response
yep.
team. I've been a trainer for that for a lot of years. And so forming up a CERT team, you know, nobody's going to question, hey, why do you have the names of your neighbors? And why are you guys skilled in being able to shut the gas off to houses in an earthquake? You know,
and you know what, though? This is all vital, important stuff. And we do have that fear. But here's my biggest thing. We've got to stop being afraid, and we've got to start standing up. Why do you buy tactical gear? These are turning up on search warrant requests. Well, he bought 5 black face masks, a black backpack with Molly webbing. He bought a tactical notebook. So who cares? This is not evidence of a crime. Organizing notes, not evidence of a crime. We've got to stop being afraid of them and start asserting our rights.
Yeah.
It's one thing to expect them to respect your rights. It's quite another to assert your rights.
Sure.
And I think I'll just leave it at that. We need to be more assertive about our rights.
Well, and that's something I admire about you, Joe, is that you don't apologize for your viewpoints. You don't apologize for wanting to prepare and be ready. But I've really seen some very, very smart men that have a lot of experience in the military and other things, and that think a lot differently. And I think too, it might depend on where you live or what's your current situation. If you're in a job that, if people knew that you had those kind of things or you did those things, you'd be fired. Or if you're constantly surrounded by people who think that's crazy, you might be a little more leery of that. But I
totally agree, but we're fast approaching a point where, so everyone's saying right now, well, I can't do this because of my job. I can't do this because of my family. Here's the thing. We're fast approaching a point where they're going to take all that away from you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a good point though.
Yeah. But no, yeah. Coming from someone who was fired from my job because I had a religious current, a strongly held personal belief that I didn't want, that I wasn't going to take that experimental shot. And they acknowledged that and gave me the exemption, but then said, well, we can't accommodate you, and proceeded to fire me. I made that stand, and I had people saying, well, just take the shot, or just, you know, hey, you can forge a card or whatever. And I'm like, it's not about keeping the job just to keep the job. It's about the principle of drawing the line in the sand and saying no to tyranny, to saying no to somebody who's going to force you to do something illegal that's against your will just because they claim it's an emergency.
Yeah, they've learned that they can say that and do literally anything. They're going to continue to do it.
Oh, yeah. And people just let them do it. It's unbelievable. They've spent, and the place where I was terminated from, they've spent millions in overtime payments. And it's just unbelievable the amount of damage it's done for the citizens and the communities. But yet they just continue to put their feet in the sand and say, no, we're not going to do it. So yeah, it's pretty sad. Yep. So your viewpoint as far as organizing and still maintaining OPSEC is that you can be careful in using written records and code words, that you can keep some of the personal information separate. One thing I wanted to hit on was going back a little bit. You talked about knowing the people in your group, knowing their homes and their families. I think that's rather important too. Tell me, what could happen if people don't know. Like, how would somebody's family member contact another member of the group if they don't know who they are or their phone number?
Yeah, so that's a key thing. Everyone's got to know each other. And you have to be a tight-knit group to where the first time that your family meets the rest of the group cannot be when bad things are happening. You've got to already know each other, know how to get a hold of each other, and be training together. I say have barbecues together. Go do a weekend training thing, whole families, right, so that everyone – gets to know each other. Everyone is ready to help each other. Everyone is more willing to help each other because they know each other. On the flip side, if they don't, accidents happen. No one's ever met your wife, and then all of a sudden she's coming through the perimeter one night and she gets shot because no one has ever met her. You have to know each other pretty well, and that way you also know how people react during certain things by spending time training together. What else can happen when you start inviting in people you don't know? Is the same thing that happened in Michigan, where you've got a group of 16 people, 12 of which are federal agents or informants, and they talk the other four into doing something only because the other four were too stupid to say no. And then you end up literally in prison, completely entrapped by your government that you said would never do that.
Yeah. I've seen and made efforts in the past to connect with like-minded people, and you get the keyboard warrior, the guy that just wants to chat in the chat rooms and post memes, but they never want to meet together or do any training or actually get to know you. And I would suggest people be aware of people like that. And we have a very strong vetting process for our group. We actually, and I'm actually proud of it, that we came to fruition through AMCON, American Contingency, Mike Glover's group. And we maintain a loose affiliation with them, but he was vilified through the.
I was going to say the federal government told me that they're terrorists, man. Yeah. You people are terrorists.
Yes, and I loved what he had to say when they said a low history of violence, and he said there's no history of violence.
I'll tell you what. The day after that, you notice too on that same bulletin, they used NC Scout symbol too. They said the resistor symbol. So the next day on our show, I wore NC Scout t-shirt.
Yep.
And you know what? We have to stop shying away from these labels. You want to call me that? That's fine. But I'm not going to cower from it. And And I get it. It's a little easier for me since I work from home, and you know, I've got income that's not supported by having a job. But there's going to come a point where they're going to take that from you too, and you just have to decide what's my limit. And I think that we are so close to that, it's silly. Literally last week, the President of the United States, as I put out in my article about this, I can't believe that a United States President literally called 74 million people a threat to democracy.
That was insane.
You've got to prepare for that eventuality. They literally would rather see you dead than let you have a voice that you're guaranteed.
Well, and you have a good point, and it's if you're in a job where they hate you for the values that you have, if you were to come out, maybe you should find a new job. Maybe you should find a place, because like you said before, eventually they will fire you. And so maybe you need to look like thank God we decided to move when we did, and we got a good interest rate and we're able to get a good price on our house. But I just felt that sense that get out of the city. And now we have a great place where we've got some pigs and we've got chickens and bees. And if you knew me, I grew up in the city. So my dad laughs. He's like, when I told him I was getting some pigs, he said, what? He thought I was joking. But, you know, we're trying to become more resilient.
Well, that's it. You have to remove yourself from reliance on their systems, right? If I live in a city, I'm reliant on the transportation system, the food system, all of that. If I've removed myself from their systems, they can't force me to do anything. And that's what my books were all about. And I think I illustrated that in book 2 or 3. That if you're self-sufficient, they can't make you do anything. The only thing that's left to them
exactly.
is force of arms. And if you make that costly enough for them, they're not going to do it.
Exactly.
And seriously, I think we're getting to that point. And it's just important that we need to realize that we are not descendants of men who would go along to get along. That should be anathema to everyone who is an American. Read Patrick Henry's speech. That's my biggest thing.
Nice. Yeah, and just going right back to Proverbs 22:3, right?
Absolutely.
If you see trouble coming, and as we look, and if you don't have your head in the sand, if you can't see the president on TV with the red backdrop and his fists in the air shaking and calling you, you know, an enemy of the country. If you can't see that trouble coming and you decide you're not going to prepare well, then you probably are going to deserve what you get, sadly.
Yeah. Let me know your address in case you got anything good want.
If you got great gear in your basement, we can come and pick it up. Oh, God right. Help us that doesn't happen. But yeah, well, we're preparing physically. We're preparing mentally and we're preparing spiritually. So Joe, I really appreciate everything you had to share with us. It was great. Anything, your YouTube channel, you got anything new coming up there? And is that their regular content out on there?
Well, there had been for a while. And my producer and I just sat down and talked about a few things. I've got a couple of shelter building videos that I'm working on. I went out in the woods with some tarps and made a couple of different configuration shelters. Last weekend, I filmed setting up the U.S. Marine Corps combat tent, one-person tent, and how useful it can be in staying hidden and dry. So that kind of stuff's coming up.
Nice.
I think we've got a couple more South African guys to come on and talk about their experience. We got lots coming up.
Well, that's great. Okay, so everybody make sure you check out Joe's YouTube channel and your books and materials, the tactical-wisdom.com has the blog, has ability there to make a donation. I really liked your the fact that after each one of your blog posts, you just have a little click button and you say, hey, did you get some value out of this? Click here and donate. So I was like, heck yeah. So click the button and donate whenever you want. And so that's better than paying for cable or something like that. That's
right on. And, you know, I'm going to tell you the funniest part about that is I've had that on there for a while. And when I put out my rebuttal to Joe Biden's speech, for the first time ever, I was getting $50 donations because it apparently fired people right up. So nice. If you go to my site for the first time, start with a rebuttal. That is a great article.
Okay.
Take a look at it.
Okay, great. So that's a tactical-wisdom.com. And Joe, I'm going to be Project 223. We'll be with our friends Intrepid Tactics at the Panhandle Preparedness Expo on October 1st and 2nd. And I think we're going to have some of your books on sale there. And so that'll be cool. If people are there and they want to pick up some of the books in person, that'd be great. We'd love to see you there.
I just got a notice that those will be there on Wednesday, for the record.
Oh, that's great. Joe, it was wonderful talking with you. You've been a kind of a hero of mine. I love your books. I love listening to you on your Brook Talks America podcast. And I think I've listened to those through two or three times, just because it's just like going to school and learning.
Right on.
So I really enjoy this time with you. I appreciate your time with us. And thanks for the interview.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Outstanding content, information, wisdom, tactical wisdom from Joe Dolio. It was great having Joe on the podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you learned a lot. And most of all, I hope you go out and get Joe's books. Start with book one, and I'm sure you'll want to get the rest. Read them, learn them, and live them. So, from the Eagle's Nest, this is Brent, the Bald Eagle, signing off. We'll see you next time. Out.